Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Steve Apt, Chief Financial Officer of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. And joining us in our conversation is Dennis Kayser. Well, Steve, you've talked a little bit about the banking and thrift crisis in the 1980s and early 1990s. Could you tell us a little bit more about that and what provisions were put into place to avoid such a crisis in the future?
The rise in the number of bank failures in the 80s really had no single cause or even a short list of causes. It was sort of a confluence of various forces, almost a perfect storm of events, economic, financial, legislative, and regulatory changes at the time that pieced together produced a decade worth of banking crisis. In general, first, there were some broad national forces at work, and I think these established the preconditions for the increased number of bank failures. Secondly, you had a series of severe regional and sectoral recessions that hit banks in a number of markets and led to a majority of the failures. I think people remember the Dallas, New England, California regions. And third, some of the banks in these markets assumed excessive risks and were insufficiently restrained by supervisory authorities. And that's also resulted in disproportionate numbers. Just to give you some specifics, I think it's interesting. Between 80 and 1994, over 1,600 banks failed or received assistance from FDIC. And then during the same period, over 1,300 SNLs failed. The fails more than bankrupted the old SNL fund, the old savings and loan fund. And those failures cost the American public directly over $125 billion and more billions in indirect costs. Congress responded with a number of pieces of legislation, and I think these pieces of legislation restored confidence, strengthened deposit insurance, and also streamlined the process for the resolution of failed institutions and the disposal of assets. To further strengthen the hand, in 1991, Congress passed the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation Improvement Act of 1991, or FDICIA, as we call it. And this did a number of things that I think will help prevent any crises in the future. It expanded our borrowing authority from the Department of Treasury, so if we needed more money than is in the fund, we could go to Treasury and get that. It mandated risk-based deposit insurance assessment system. It restricted the use of brokered deposits, required on-site bank examinations, and importantly to us, least cost method for resolution of banks and prompt corrective action to deal with banks.
Steve, those are some of the threats that challenged us in the past. What do you see as the top threats that will challenge the future of the nation's financial system?
Well, threat is kind of a strong word. We prefer the term risk. And certainly there are risks out there. I think one of the risks we look at naturally arises out of the ongoing consolidation of the banking industry. Consolidation means that the risk to deposit insurance faces is increasingly concentrated in the large banks. I think you've heard about the proposed mergers recently of J.P. Morgan and Bank of America. Along with Citibank, those three banks alone would represent about a third of the total banking assets, about $1 trillion each, so $3 trillion on a $9 trillion base. When you add in the top 25 banks, you're about half of the industry assets. Top 100, about two-thirds of the industry assets. So unlike most of the banks that failed in the last crisis, these banks are highly diversified and they're well-positioned to absorb those losses. However, the challenge is to manage such large, complex organizations, for them to keep the handle on it. So our task, I think, is to be forward-looking in how we assess risk, and how the risks are managed and contained. And there's a lot of unforeseeable things, shocks, 9/11, wars, policy mistakes. This is why we're putting so much emphasis on our National Risk Committee and our Resolutions Policy Committee to monitor that. So that's the concentration side of it. The other area that we're looking at is really the sort of personal balance sheet. That has us concerned a little bit. When you look at the household sector, which has been the engine for banking growth in the 2001 recession and beyond, personal bankruptcies are occurring at a near record pace, and household indebtedness is rising. It's at a historical high now of 112% of disposable income. Part of this is the lowest mortgage rates in a generation, and it's prompted households to take out over $1.4 trillion in new mortgage debt. There's also been a democratization of credit, so consumers have unprecedented access to credit these days. However, the amount of disposable income homeowners must use to keep their debts current has been rising in this low interest rate environment. We are concerned about the long-term sustainability of the growth in the consumer spending. If there's a steep decrease in consumer spending, that could be of a concern. Lastly, commercial real estate. High concentrations there are a concern, although banks have learned a lot from the crisis. They diversify the risk. They do better underwriting. They farm out some of the credits to pension and other investors. But our experience from the 80s and 90s sort of lingers, so we still always look at commercial real estate as well.
Other than these financial risks, do you think there are any other challenges on the horizon for the FDIC?
Yes, we do. The overall industry is very dynamic, and I think we have to always be forward-looking in these risks. New products, new procedures, new risks of that nature. We're going to have to continue look for these potholes out there on the horizon as it goes forward. We are, again, because of the concentration concern about almost a two-tier banking system where you have so much concentration over on the one side in the top 100 banks and then smaller banks on the other side. Different capital standards, just different things like that. We're taking a look at that.
So what is your vision for the FDIC over, say, the next 5 to 10 years?
I think, number one, we need to maintain our posture as a very risk-focused organization. Risk is what we look at all the time. We have to always be assessing where the risks are. We have to be anticipating where they are. We have to be educating banks, and we put out a lot of information to banks about in states and other levels about where we see these trends going. So we have to be ever vigilant on that. As an organization, we need to maintain our focus on being a low-cost provider. Our Chairman Powell is very focused on us having a sort of a high-performing organization. So we're trying to keep our costs as low as possible. We're pushing real-time information as a way to sort of help us analyze that. And we're also pushing performance culture. Those three ingredients are going to be the hallmark of how we conduct ourselves as we maintain this risk focus.
Your career has been dedicated to public service, and so we're curious, what advice would you give to somebody who's interested in serving the public?
I would say give it serious consideration. I think when I answered the human resources question, what I was saying is the government workforce is changing. I think some of the young folks out there look at the government as if I go in, I have to be there forever. I think more and more we'd like to have the flexibility for people to enter the government for certain segments of their career, then maybe go out. I found that personally rewarding because you have these different points of reference. I look at the world through the lens of civic, government, and business, and all three of them have to work together, and I think ideally you could spend some time in all three areas. The government's the largest corporation on the planet. There's a lot of different activities in there. I would suggest that at some point in time you try to find an area that you're really passionate about, that you really can make a difference in. And the government does give you some advantages. The size and scale and complexity of some of these things, like FDIC insurance, can affect millions of people all over the country, and that's very rewarding. So I would say look for an area that you're passionate about. Gravitate toward bosses that are passionate about what they want to do. Look at them as mentors who you can network with through your whole career. And as frustrating as it might be on certain days, try to just appreciate all the things you're learning from dealing with all the variables in government, Congress, different oversight groups, different constituencies. You will learn a lot about carefully choreographing many variables to get results in the government. And again, if you straddle these different sectors of civic government and the private sector, I think you'll have a lot more reference points to draw on no matter where you go in your career.
That'll have to be our last question, Steve Dennison. I want to thank you for joining us this morning.
I would just like to mention again our website, www.fdic.gov. A lot of information out there, particularly our Money Smart program, which has been very well received on financial literacy. It covers many aspects of that, and we're very proud of that. And so I would steer you to that website.
This has been the Business of Government Hour, featuring a conversation with Steve App, Chief Financial Officer of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Be sure and visit us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. There you can learn more about our programs and research. You can also get a transcript of today's fascinating conversation. Again, that's businessofgovernment.org. This is Paul Lawrence. Thank you for listening.